I'm an addict. I'm Stuart.
Hi, Stuart.
First thing I want to do is I want to thank everybody who read, and you know, I want to tell you from my heart, je comprends. and I say that because I read Qui est dépendant in French today, and before this week I don't know any French, so I really know what it feels like to read something and not be sure. I can relate that to this topic, and to where I'm going to go with this topic. The topic is it's lonely at the top, and when they told me that topic, I really didn't know what they meant. I didn't know what to think about it, I kind of have an idea of where I want to go with it. And in order to do that, I need to let you know a little bit of who I am, and some of the experience of my recovery. When I got clean, in the area I got clean at, there was maybe 12 meetings a week of NA and a lot of AA. And we pretty much went anywhere and everywhere. When I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I didn't stop using right away. I came and I compared myself out, and I couldn't surrender for a long time. And finally, what happened was I got so desperate and felt so alone that I tried Narcotics Anonymous. And I remember that it was my birthday in 1982, and I swore I wasn't going to use that day. That was going to be my birthday present. I was going to stay clean. And as the night went on, I didn't know the way I felt. I didn't know what to do with myself. So my head said, oh, it's your birthday, you should be partying, you should be out, it should be exciting. And so after sitting at home alone, I went out, and I went downtown to hear my friend's band play, and I swore I wasn't going to use, I was just going to go hear the band play. And in between sets, I went backstage, and I went to say hi, and everybody wished me a happy birthday, and here, try this, try that, and no. And I came down a week later, and that's my clean date. And when I got clean, the people who helped me, I didn't care, like our literature says. I didn't care who they were. I didn't care what color they were. I didn't care what religion they were. I didn't care what sex they were. I didn't care about anything. I just held on. And the people that came before me saved my life. And I stayed around the meetings, and I followed some suggestions, not all. And I paid prices for the ones I didn't follow. And I began to feel better. And a funny thing happened after I began to feel better for a while. All of a sudden, the people who saved my ass had character defects that bothered me. And I told everybody about it. You know, I took their inventory and let everybody know what was wrong with them. And all of a sudden, that network of people that saved my life was getting smaller and smaller. And I didn't allow them to be human. I didn't allow them to be addicts in recovery. And my life began to be miserable again. I learned around here that truly, what goes around comes around. What you put out comes back. If you put out good, if you put out love, if you put out from your heart, it'll come back that way. And the opposite. And some things happened. After I had taken all the inventories and cut everybody down and gossiped about everybody, and I had enough pain, I began to change. But when I made the decision that I should change, I figured everybody should know. Everybody should be aware, you know, everybody should see that I'm doing things different. And it wasn't that way. And what happened was I got very hurt. And there was someone I knew who came into recovery through a treatment center, and my heart had begun to open up. The awakening of the spirit that is talked about around here began to happen within me. And when your spirit begins to awaken, for me what happened was I began to have feelings, both ones that felt very good and ones that felt very uncomfortable. I don't want to call them bad because I don't find them bad anymore. They were just uncomfortable because I wasn't used to them. And the ones that that felt good, I wanted to share with everyone. I wanted everybody to feel good. And the ones that felt very uncomfortable, I didn't want anybody to have to feel the pain and the discomfort that I felt. So I wanted to help. And my friend who had gotten clean asked me to be a sponsor. And after I was sponsoring him for a while, he told me that this counselor who had been clean before me, one of the people whose inventory I had taken, told him, don't get stored for a sponsor. If you get stored for a sponsor, you won't stay clean. And when I found that out, it really hurt my feelings, because I had really begun to work hard to change. I had begun to work some steps, and I had begun to try and be different. And this person had kept me where I was a year ago, a year and a half ago, however long it had been. And that pain taught me that I don't want to do that to other people. I don't want to keep them where they were. And what has happened, and the topic, it's lonely at the top. I hope to share about, and that I hope someone can take something back and share it with someone else about, is what we can do to others around here. And you know, I have a friend of mine who shared with me, it's been a long time. It was at the Mid-Atlantic Regional Convention in either 1989 or 1990, and I didn't understand when he shared with me at the time, but I understand it now. He shared that he wished that he could go into a meeting where he lives and just be an addict in recovery. And he couldn't do that because he had a lot of clean time. He'd been to a lot of conventions. He'd spoke at a lot of meetings. And he just didn't feel like he could go in there and people could hear him as an addict, just an addict in recovery. And sometimes I feel the same way. I'm an addict. I'm human. I have defects of character. Sometimes they're a lot more obvious than others. I have shortcomings. I have faults. I have a whole lot of good. And what I've learned is that that recovery is something that takes time, period. You know, people say, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, you've got to work the steps, you've got to go to this many meetings, you've got to write the steps, whatever it might be, they say that you've got to do. The only thing that my experience has shown me that I had to do was not use. If all I did was not use and found the hope to go back to the next meeting, eventually all the other stuff happened. Eventually I had enough pain, and that's what I was told. I was told around here that I could do whatever I wanted to as long as I was willing to pay the price. And for me, my experience was that whenever I had enough pain and got desperate enough, I began to change. I'd love to tell y'all that I came into meetings and I heard someone say, oh, if you do this, you'll feel better. And I said, okay, and I did it. That's not the way it worked for me. The way it worked for me was when I was done banging my head against the wall, I thought, oh, they told me if I don't bang my head against the wall, it won't hurt so bad. So I tried that. And I have I understand today what he meant when he said he just wants to be an addict and wants to be able to go into a meeting and be that addict. You know, I hope to never place anyone that far up on a pedestal where when they fall, they may fall right on me. Because I don't think I can handle that. I had someone do that to me recently, and it really hurt in the area where I live at. It was someone who I was close with. You know, we were tight. We went to meetings together all the time. We hung out together. We talked almost every day. And he took my inventory in a meeting and said, "With all your clean time, you should be ashamed of yourself. You should be ashamed of yourself to act that way in a meeting." And I thought, I'm an addict. You know, don't tell me I should be ashamed of myself. You know, don't take my inventory and be so self-righteous that, you know, I'm not allowed to falter. I'm not allowed to make a mistake. What I've done around here is I have not used no matter what. I used to ask my sponsor, how would I know if I'm making the right decision? When I'm doing things, how would I know if it's the right thing? And he would say, in retrospect, when you look back on it. And I'd think, great, you know, once I look back on it, I'll know if it's the right thing. But that's the way it's been for me, you know. They told me when I got clean that I needed to surrender to Narcotics Anonymous. And what that meant for me was that if I surrendered to Narcotics Anonymous, that I was going to trust in the process of recovery in Narcotics Anonymous. That meant that I was going to believe what they said to me, that those who go to meetings regularly stay clean. If you want what we have to offer, you'll do what we did. You'll work the steps. You'll go to meetings. You won't use. You'll get a sponsor. All the things I was told. And if I trusted in that process, then eventually it would happen. And I didn't see it all the time. I didn't see it. I went through phases where I just didn't think anything was happening. But the beauty is where my life is today as a result of trusting the process. I used to say that if people didn't like me, tough, I don't care. I don't care if you like me or not. This is me. I'm doing what I got to do. Tough. And that wasn't the truth. The truth was, I want people to like me. And I remember telling my sponsor, you know, that I used to say that, and that the truth was that I really want everybody to like me. So my sponsor says, then do the things that will have people like you. Be the kind of person that people will like. Well, I didn't know what that meant. And what happened was I was guided through the steps. In the first step, I found out that addiction was my problem, and I defined addiction. I looked at the physical, the mental, and the spiritual. In the second step, I began to believe, just to believe, you know. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I got that belief just by doing it. I didn't even have to believe when I did it. I just did it. You know, I walked out on that limb because I trusted in an addict. You know, our Just for Today says, just for today, I will have faith in someone who believes in me. And that's what I did without even knowing it. You know, I had enough faith in my sponsor, and my sponsor believed in me wholeheartedly, that I had enough faith to try the things that he said. And in the third step, when I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him, for me, that was where an immense amount of change began. When I began to accept the guidance of a power greater than self. I hear people where I'm from say the third step means turn it over, you know. And I think that's, for me, that's denial. Turn what over and to where? You know, I can't just deny things exist. For me, what it meant was that I needed to, if I was going to turn my will and my life over to the care of a God that I understood, I needed to understand him. That's what it said in the steps. What that meant for me was I needed to know what type of God I had. And my God is loving, caring, patient, understanding. My God has empathy and sympathy. And all of those things are the attributes that I strive for. I want to be more like my God. And that's the kind of person that people will like and that will attract people. You know, if I attempt to be that type of person, I get those kind of results. And it's tough. And, you know, what's happened is that I've built a trust with my sponsor and his sponsor, and I have allowed them to help me in my recovery. I used to, the same thing I said about people in the rooms, you know, I have a lot of damage internally with my family. I felt different in my family. Even today, sometimes I feel different in my family. There's really no addicts in my family but me. I have two brothers, one older, one younger. Both are married with kids. I'm not, my mother and I never got along. Never. In recovery, I got to a point where I had to stop talking to my mother because I realized that my mother was okay, that I was the problem, and that I didn't know how to deal with her. And I learned how to deal with her and how to accept her through learning how to accept the people in these rooms. My father, I had this twisted image of my father. I thought, like, my father should be this John Wayne man who, you know, was this big macho whatever, and that wasn't my father. My father, I had a real big deal with my father this year. I was given the guidance from my grand sponsor to do something with my father. And what had happened was, several years ago, I came to find out who my father really is. I used to think my father was a wimp. I used to think he was nothing I wanted to be. He didn't argue with my mother, and if he did, it always seemed like he gave in. My father is a very religious man, and I'm not. And because he had his beliefs, I thought that, you know, different of him, I thought less of him. My mother would cook dinner, and my father would come home for dinner from work, and we'd all sit down, and he'd get called because they'd need him up at the house of prayer so that he could go help pray, and he would leave the house. And I didn't understand any of that. And those were my thoughts of my father. That was my vision of my father. My vision was that he was this really wimpy guy. And he had a birthday, a big one, and my mother threw a big party for him, and all his old friends came, and they had a microphone, and they all got up to talk about him, to make fun of him, and nobody could make fun of my father. And everybody had wonderful stuff to say about my father. I mean, just the type of man that he is. And I learned that that my father is the man that I want to be. He's the man that I talked about in the third step. He's that loving, caring, patient, got to be with me. He's just got all the qualities. He may not like animals like I like animals. He may not like the sports that I like. But his heart is what I want. He has the heart that I want. And when I came around to recovery, they told me, if you want what we have, then you have to do what we did. And my grand sponsor says that if your father is the man you want to be, he says there's some things you have to do. And he said to me that in religion they say to honor thy father and thy mother. And he said it's time to honor your father. It's time to tell him that he's the man you want to be. And just like in recovery, if you want to be that way, you need to ask him how he got that way. So, I didn't want to do it. I was scared to death. You know, I never talked to my father more than, hi, how you doing? You know, the only time I ever told him I loved him would be in a birthday card, happy birthday, love, Stuart, you know, that kind of stuff. But I had enough trust in the man who gave me the guidance to do this, that once again I just went out on a limb. And I called my father up,
And I asked him what he was doing the next night. And he says, why? And I said, oh, I'd like to get together and have dinner with you. He says, what do you need? Because I never called him for anything unless, you know, I needed something. I said, no, I just want to talk to you. Haven't talked to you for a while. Haven't seen you for a while. You know, so we got together for dinner. And I told him what kind of man I thought he was all my life. And I told him the type of man that I know he is, and that's what I want to be. And I asked him how he got that way. And he shared with me the things that he went through to get to where he was. And what he went through was a whole lot of mistakes. He made a whole lot of errors in his own life, things that he would have done different. And just like in recovery, I learned that there's a process for us to get where we're going, and that we need to allow each other to have our process. My father had his. I never thought that he did the things he did. They moved when I was young. They moved from one part of town to another, and my father took a job so that he could support the family, and he put everything into that one job. And the job went out of business, and he had no money. He didn't know what to do, and he went and he got another job. You know, I mean, little stuff. But I never would have thought that they had that type of struggle. I would have never known the difficulties they had in providing for us. So to tie that back into the subject, it ties right back into what I used to do to the people who came before me. How I didn't know them. I don't believe I knew them. And I took their inventory. And I believe today that if you're not in my life on a regular basis, then we don't know each other. I know the efforts that I place into trying to change. And if you're an addict like I'm an addict, in recovery like I'm in recovery, you're doing the same thing. Your pace may be different than mine. Your time may be different than mine. But the path is the same. And if the path is the same, then I know your pain and I know your struggle. And if you look, you know mine. And all we have more than the person that comes behind us is experience, what we've gone through. I used to think that things that happened were either good or bad. When something happened and I didn't like it, it was bad. And when something happened that I liked, obviously it was good. And what my experience taught me was that the things that happened to me in my life, a couple things happened afterwards. The things especially that I thought were bad, what I realized happened to me afterwards was I didn't use and I got through it. And I grew. And growth was just a wonderful thing. It was what I was here for. And the next thing that happened, and it's happened every time with every situation I've been through, and the ones that I can't see that it's happened, it just hasn't happened yet. But every time that I've had a difficult struggle and I've gotten through it, somewhere down the road, God put somebody in my life that was going through a similar struggle. And I got to share with them my experience and my hope and how I got through it. And to have something happen, to grow from it, to be able to share that experience and hope with someone else and help them, how can I think it's bad? You know. So my whole vision has changed on how I see things since I've been clean. My heart has opened up to a point where it hurts when you hurt. When when there's joy, there's tears of joy, you know. We can fix that too. They told me that the 12 steps were a path to the awakening of the spirit, and I didn't understand any of that. And what happened was the 12 steps gave me a God, my God, and the awakening of my spirit opened my heart to the point where I can feel for others. I can allow others to be human. I can accept others. I can forgive others. That's been one of the biggest joys. You know, when I talked to my father, the week before my father and I spoke, my uncle died. And my uncle was an angry man, nice man, but he had a lot of anger. And my father was telling me that when they were going through his things, they found a black book. And the black book had names and dates of people that had done things that he was angry about. And my father said to me, he said, you know, one thing that I have always prided myself on is that I don't hold a grudge. And he said that maybe that was why Uncle Dave died the way he did, because he held on to that stuff so much. And, you know, I hear around here it's better to forgive than be forgiven. You know, I mean, all the things we hear around here. And little by little, the picture becomes more clear the longer I stay around here. And it comes clear from places and from people and from times that I just wouldn't expect it. And that message gave me the message strong to my heart about letting things go and allowing people to be human. And not holding on to the anger and the resentment of what may or may not have happened. You know, and that's all a part of becoming the person I want to be. As far as it being lonely at the top, I don't know where the top is. And sometimes I feel lonely. People in my area where I'm from, I don't think they ever expect me to feel lonely. I love to have fun. I'm always doing things. I've been clean in my area a long time. I know a lot of people. You know, but another part of the message is it doesn't matter how long you've been around here. It doesn't matter how many people you know. Sometimes between my own ears, I'm the loneliest person around. You know, and sometimes out of nowhere, someone will just come up and give me a hug, and that's like, it's what I needed. That's it. And I try to remember, especially with the people who I got clean with who've been around for some time in the area I'm at, what they need. You know, they need the same hugs that the newcomer needs. They need the same smiles that the newcomer needs. They need the same hope. Just like I was told when I first got clean, that if I went into a meeting and I found the hope, then I would make it to the next meeting. So I needed to look for the hope everywhere I went. And these are all the things that I still need to remember. And the message, if nothing else, that I want to carry tonight is that in reference to clean time, I believe clean time is very important. A lot of people say the person who woke up the earliest has the most amount of clean time, and I understand the principle of just for today. I understand the principle of a day at a time. But I also understand that if I'm new and I feel like using, that I'm better off going to someone with a lot of days back to back than with someone less than me. to say, hey, I feel like using. I'll get maybe a stronger message of not to use. Lonely at the top, tough topic, real tough topic for me. I know that what I want to share in my heart is that what I really want to share in my heart is that we need to love one another, we need to care for one another, we need to encourage one another. You know, and it just came to me just now, something that I share at home, and up here in Canada, this is the perfect place to share it, because it's about geese and what the geese do. And I always share about trying to be more like the geese, because see, I never pat people on the back. I didn't used to encourage people, and I love animals. I learn from animals. Addiction to me is like wolves. The way wolves, if you know anything about animals, wolves, when they hunt, they cut you off from the pack. You know, whatever they're hunting, their prey, they cut them off from the pack, get them alone, and then they wound them, and then after they wound them, they kill them. You know, and that's what addiction does. And geese fly in a flock, in a V. And the reason they fly in a V is because when they flap their wings, it creates lift, and they can fly further, and they can fly longer off of the help they get from one another. And geese are always honking. And what they're doing when they're honking, the head geese, the lead goose, they're encouraging them to keep going. Which is what we need to do around here, is encourage one another. If a goose gets hurt, gets shot, two go down with him and stay with him until he's either okay or dead. You know? There's just, you know, that's what we need to do for one another around here. We need to take care of one another. We need to remember that we're addicts in recovery on a path that may wind at different places for each other, but we're all going the same place, and without each other, we have nothing. You know? If I came into my first NA meeting and nobody was there, I'd be dead. And with that, I'd like to say I'm glad to be here. Je m'appelle Stuart, je suis dépendant. And that's it. It's your meeting.